In the second part of this podcast, the conversation takes a more philosophical bent as we discuss finding balance, peace, and gratitude. And I asked Jenny if she could rewrite her life. Would she? Her answer is thoughtful, reflective, and compassionate. It's an answer we could all learn from. You know, it's interesting. I think we all have these diametrically opposed ideas of ourselves in our heads. Mm-hmm. And the live-die one I find really interesting. I went through something along those lines. I went through just a brutal, difficult divorce. And in going through it, I started flying high performance sailplanes, airplanes without any engine. Talk about life wish, death wish. Oh, wow. My God.
Uh-huh.
I've thought about it enormously. And the life wish part of it was the experience of awe, of beauty, of connection, a very spiritual experience, actually. The death wish side of it was the ground and my life on the ground and how everything was in tatters and it was so terrible. And there's a Buddhist saying, find the middle way. I don't know that I've ever been able to find the middle way. I think I have to go from one extreme to the other, and it gives me so much perspective and information, but the middle way seems to elude me.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. Or I would also add to that, the middle way is very uncomfortable if you happen to land there for a brief few minutes. It's not a comfort zone. To me, all or nothing is comfortable. Even if it's painful, it's still a sense of comfort because it's what I know. And when you get into that middle area, you know, not too happy, not too sad, or not working too hard or working too hard, you know, whatever those dynamics are, I'm not working all day, every day, killing myself, and I'm working like you're supposed to be working, like a normal, working professional, I'm like, oh, should I be doing something? You know, is this enough? You know, and that middle ground is not an area that I'm comfortable in. And it's a real practice to try to stay or get to that place.
It is, but I'm going to say I'll only speak for myself. It's kind of a boring place. It may be a healthy place.
Well, there's that too.
I think that when you experience these extremes, it gives you so much more appreciation for what people go through, you know, hot, cold, life, death, whatever extreme you might think of, that in knowing those extremes, you are suddenly capable of bringing such great compassion to others.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You can, you know, I sometimes feel like it's kind of a gift and a curse. I can kind of come into a room and feel the vibe, feel the energy, whether positive or negative. One of the things that we do in recovery is, and it can be any kind of recovery, right? It doesn't have to be alcohol. It could be drugs. It could be food. It could be gambling, whatever, is that identification is critical for those things. That we, you know, if I talk to you about flying planes, I'm not going to be very helpful to you because I don't know anything about that, you know? But if you know, I talked to you about divorce, I went through a divorce and the pain that caused, that's something that I think you may pay attention to. And for me, I had numerous doctors and nurses and healthcare professionals and therapists and all telling me, you know, it's not a good idea to drink. Drinking's bad for you. You're going to die or your health is, that's all intellectually, I get it. But somebody saying, hey, I drank like you did. This is what I did to get better. I know that you must be feeling like there's no end in sight, but this is what I did. Just that, somebody who knows that, it's just priceless.
You know, in Alcoholics Anonymous, they have this, how many steps do they have?
12.
12. Mm-hmm. What do you think was the most profound of the 12 for you?
Oh, that's a great question. It depends. I mean, I would say step one, admitting that I was powerless and my life was unmanageable, was absolutely, if you don't do that one, the others don't even really matter. At least, I'm only speaking for my experience, but you know, it was profound in the sense that I did it kind of in a hospital bed and then something changed. But really, really believing that is profound, right? You know, you could say, man, my life is a mess. You know, nobody wants anything to do with me. I have no money. I have no job, blah, blah, blah. But really admitting that my life was unmanageable and that if I drank, there wasn't every day hospital trip. But, you know, I could drink and some days wake up and remember everything. And then I could drink and not. And the powerlessness is you just don't know what's going to happen when you take a drink, when you take alcohol into your system. And so that's pretty profound. But I've had profound moments in other steps, you know, 8 and 9, making amends to people, you know. That still is going on 9.5 years later, you know. And what I had to learn from that step is that me telling you if I've harmed you, doesn't necessarily mean you have to accept my apology, or that I don't get to tell you when you need to forgive me. Like, that's your process, you know. But my part is trying to right whatever wrong it is I did to you. And I had everything. I love how everything kind of ties together in the universe. My father dying in December had a profound effect on me, obviously, but I feel like he's sending me little nuggets, and one of them was an amends. That was really cool because my father was a very distinguished professor at a university in South Florida, and when he died, it was a big announcement. He was one of the founders of the university back in the 70s, big deal. So they announced it to the entire university system, and somebody reached out to me that I was really good friends with back in the 90s, and we partied together and had a great time together, but I ended up not being such a good friend and just abandoning her emotionally in many ways. And it was one of those things that I thought I'd never see her again. I'd never have the chance to connect with her again because I didn't know how to find her. I had tried years ago, but I couldn't. And she reached out to me because she works at that university now and saw the news about my father and said, you know, hey, I heard your father passed away. I'm so sorry. And we connected again, and I was able to make that amends. And so that's pretty awesome because some amends came really quickly and some I'm still working on today. And sometimes the amends is really just not, you know, just doing what I'm supposed to be doing as an adult, you know. Showing up, not putting people who love me through hell to be worried if I'm okay, if I'm stable, you know, to really be a stable, responsible human being and somebody who can. And then, you know, obviously step 12 is carrying the message to somebody else because somebody took the time to give me this experience and these lessons, you know, on their own time, no charge, no therapy. They did it on themselves. And that's what I do. We all try in recovery to help somebody else. And if somebody needs help, we're there for them. And so that's a big thing for me. Trying to connect with communities that I've been in, you know, a couple of my colleagues in Wilmington, Delaware, we all started a community refrigerator. For a local medical center that's in an area that really needs help. And some of the people in that area are homeless, some are not, but they live in very tight economic times. And we created this refrigerator that not only feeds them, but also allows them to bring stuff that they have to give to somebody else. So it kind of helps, it makes it a true community thing and takes away some of that shame. That, oh, I need help, you know. There's a lot of shame in saying I need help, and that's what keeps a lot of people from getting better. And to get through that shame is really hard. And so step 12 in helping others doesn't necessarily mean I'm out picking up alcoholics off the street. It just means that I'm here to help somebody who might need my help.
You know, the shame aspect of it is really interesting because as you look across society, there are so many addictions.
Sure.
There are addictions to busyness. There are addictions to our phones. There are addictions to you name it. But those addictions don't carry shame with them, do they?
I think that there could. It depends, right? I think it's really what happens when you're participating in that addiction, right? And it might not carry shame at first, but I think all of us, if we're partaking in something a little too much, that it becomes an issue where you're losing relationships with people or losing a piece of yourself, can in essence create a little bit of shame, right? You know, a busyness. I am, you know, they talk about, you know, you give up the alcohol, what do you pick up next? You know, I definitely can be classified as a recovering workaholic. You know, I would stay busy, 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 and make sure that you're showing your worth and showing that you deserve to be here, and just that over thing where it would make me lose time with people who wanted to spend time with me. You know, somebody calls it busy with your busyness. And I, even though I'm in the middle of trying to work so hard and produce and be awesome and the best, I'm still, you know, I do feel the, I get what you're saying. Like, it's not the shame of, you know, having this really outwardly society not endorsed kind of addiction. That is not that type of shame, right? But I think there's still little pockets of shame that might keep people from making a change.
Yeah, I'm in the midst of reading Johan Hari's new book, and he talks, I'll have to look up the name of it. I'm just terrible at remembering these things. Let's see. Stolen Focus is the name of it. And he explores why we can't pay attention anymore in this world. Mm-hmm. It's a superb book. Why You Can't Pay Attention and How to Think Deeply Again. And I'm just past the point where he goes off on a vacation for, I believe, 3 months with no phone, no internet connection. He just strips all the electronics away from his life, and he has a really difficult time with it for a period. Mm-hmm. But it offered him a lot of insight and introspection into technology in our lives. And I bring up technology only because I think that it is another external influence that is changing us emotionally, changing us in terms of our social bonds and connections, in terms of responsibility in some cases.
Absolutely.
And that is not very different than having an alcohol or any drug problem.
Absolutely. And what I relate to all of those things is getting out of yourself, getting out of whatever you're trying to numb, whatever's going on in there. Looking at your phone all day is taking yourself out of, am I worried about this? Am I worried about that? Because you're just numbing, you know, it's all numbing. Even exercise, you know, running, and like I would exercise all the time, that's numbing. You get those endorphins, those feel-good endorphins, numbing what you don't want to face, right? And I'm not perfect, you know. There's definitely stuff I don't want to maybe look at today, but I know I'm going to maybe look at it tomorrow or in the near future, right? You know, and sometimes, like for me, numbing today because I don't drink could be taking a long nap. My brother calls it you're going to sleep, Jenny. But I won't lay down unless it's a good 2 hours. You know, I mean, that's a nap for me, but I sometimes will say that's how I check out, like just to keep the hamster in the wheel going of all the things that I'm thinking about. And I think we do that. Do I have shame about it? Probably not, but I do know it's probably not the healthiest thing. Everything's relative though. It's better than drinking, right? But, you know, I think we're all trying to numb ourselves from something that we don't want to face.
I think, though, the more you face things within yourself, the more you give yourself over to self-reflection, the stronger that muscle becomes and the easier it gets.
Yes, it is action, right? The action is critical, right? And making that a habit and making, you know, being willing, I talk about willingness a lot, being willing to do that, because it sounds like, you know, somebody telling me you need to get on your knees every morning and thank God for giving you, keeping you sober yesterday, and get on your knees at night and thank him for another sober day. That wasn't natural to me, but I do it all the time now. And that kind of action to be willing to do something that might break you of that habit, you know, sometimes for me, if I'm in a not such a great headspace, just walking out the door and taking that taking that move a muscle, change a thought kind of attitude will help shift that. But to actually walk to the door sometimes, and I'm an athlete, for me to actually walk out the door can be a heavy burden. And I think, but yes, taking that action will help make those changes, absolutely.
What advice would you give somebody facing a similar circumstance where their life is just out of control because of whatever addiction? What should they do?
I think, obviously ask for help. There's all different ways of getting help. And unfortunately, it doesn't, there's not a clear cookie cutter way to get help, right? There have been, for me, Alcoholics Anonymous is what worked. I went to several treatment programs. They didn't work, but that because I wasn't willing. So I think the initial thing is thinking, are you really ready to change? That would be my first thing, right? You know, if you're not medically stable, obviously you need to get medically stable first. There is something that we kind of call the golden time where somebody has drank or used all night or for a long period of time, and then they wake up and you're in that, like, if you've ever had a bad hangover, like multiply that times 100, and they're like, never again. You know, if you've ever had a hangover and you're like, I'm never drinking again, like that moment is usually a time where you can say to somebody, are you ready to stop? Are you ready? Because usually that's when, probably my experience, they might be the most willing. But to me, really, the first thing is, if you really think that something needs to change or you think you're in trouble, ask yourself, are you really willing to do what it takes, whatever it takes, to get better? Because if you're not, it's just a lot of time, money, and things like that. But I will say, and I told this to people I've made amends to, I've been around the rooms of AA for years before I truly got sober. And it's not for nothing. You know, I've had sponsors that have worked with me, and I pretended to be sober because I thought I told them what I thought they wanted to hear. And they were really hurt when they found out I was still kind of drinking. This was years ago. But I said, I heard you. I think those seeds, even if you don't get it right then, those seeds were planted. You know, I heard them. Once you get into AA or any kind of recovery program, your usage, whatever it is that you numb with, is never the same, right? You know, once you know about Alcoholics Anonymous, you can never drink normally again and carefree and like, oh, you know, because in the mind you're like, I'm probably an alcoholic. So those seeds get planted. So I think even first, are you willing to do what you really do? You really want to stop? Are you willing to do what it takes? But then also getting exposure and professional assessment on where and what you need. You know, I am a nurse, but I am not somebody who can diagnose somebody on the street. But I'd say only you can answer if you're a true addict or an alcoholic or whatever kind of addiction. I recommend, have you had enough? Are you willing to do what you need to do? And then go get professional help.
If you could rewrite your story, would you?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know, because I don't know if I could get to be, have this peace inside of me that I have today without going through what I went through. I would say probably yes and no. I know it sounds wishy-washy and gray, right? But there was definitely some things that I wish I never had to experience or see. But I would never want a life that I didn't have to struggle in some way through, because I think it gives you such gratitude. And I would never want to live today without gratitude. And I have lived without gratitude in the past. And it's just not it's a miserable, miserable life. So there's obviously things I wish I could have done better or handled better. But there's a saying in AA that says we will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. And that's one of the promises of AA. And I don't regret the past or wish to shut the door on it. You know, I want to remember my past, because if I don't, it can be really easy for me to think, oh, I could handle another one. You know, I'm okay. I've been sober for 10 years. What, what's it going to hurt to drink now? I must be fine. But what happens is you just pick right up where you left off and actually go down much faster. So, no, I think even for everything I've been through, I don't feel like I would need to rewrite too much of it. If it was rewritten, it would be there would still be struggle in there, because I think it gets me to where I don't think I could have the profession that I have, the amazing career, the family and friends that I have, the husband that I have. I don't think I could have that without struggle and recovery.
And you talk about a sense of peace. And where does that come from? How did you find this deep sense of peace?
It's the work that I've put in. But the peace is really about being at peace with myself, as, you know, I can walk it down a street and not be afraid of who I'm going to run into. Peace at looking myself in the mirror and not hating who I am. And that just comes through work. When you kind of, for me, you know, I talked earlier about crossing those bridges. Those bridges bring me peace, you know, actually walking through something that I might be totally terrified to walk through, getting to the other side and saying, okay, you know, I made it, and I didn't die. Sometimes if I'm really scared, I'm like, are you going to die? And the answer is no. And then I'm like, okay, I'll go through this. But, you know, facing people, facing mistakes I've made, and owning up to that brings me peace. Absolutely.
Thank you for joining us today. I hope you found something in today's podcast that inspires you along your own life's path, because sometimes a bump in the road is actually a portal into a more conscious and meaningful life. You can subscribe to our free podcast at www.bumpintheroad.us or become a premium member to hear the full conversation. Just go to www.bumpintheroad.us for more information and to sign up.